for the most entertaining talk anywhere. Stay tuned to LA Talk Radio, your real talk station. Your real 24 talk hours of commercial-free programming.
Listening to Critical Mass with Rick Franzi and Doug Feller, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Critical Mass. I'm Doug Feller and I'm here today with my partner Rick Franzi. Rick, how's it going on Monday afternoon for you?
I am great, Douglas. Thank you for asking.
We are now in our second month of hosting our radio show here on latalkradio.com. If you're not listening to the show live and happen to have had one of our recordings come into your hands, then you want to go to latalkradio.com and check the archives and see what you've missed. You know, we realize that we really never have given you, the listeners, much information about Rick and I. So this afternoon, rather than interviewing one of our prominent business guests, we're going to interview one of our prominent other selves. So, you know, we hope that that way you'll know a little bit more about us, maybe some of our bias, some of our experience and background, what causes our thinking to be the way it is, and also along the way, learn a little bit more about CEO peer groups and executive coaching. So welcome to the show. We're glad to have you here, and we appreciate you listening. You know, last year, Rick wrote the definitive book on CEO peer groups with the same title as the radio show, Critical Mass. What a coincidence. Go figure that, huh? So let's get things started by finding out more about Rick and his background in the book. So, Rick, give us a little bit about your background.
Well, Doug, like you, I was a member of a CEO peer group for a number of years before we were, you know, drawn to this kind of role in life of being peer group leaders, forum facilitators. And it was really for me at a transformative time in my career. Previous to being the general manager and president for the division of Delphi out here on the west coast of the United States, I had always been in sales and marketing, worked my way up through corporate America, a number of large firms, Fortune 500 companies, always in the sales and growing into the sales and marketing aspect of it. And so when I was offered the opportunity to be the general manager and have the full profit and loss responsibility for the business, even though I had graduated earlier from Pepperdine with an MBA, I felt really somewhat ill-prepared to take on the responsibilities for the entire business. And so I had made the request of the organization to give me the opportunity to find an external program that would, you know, kind of help me to fill in the gaps in my experience base. And when I made that request, Doug, I really didn't know that Renaissance Executive Forums and CEO peer groups existed in the world. But I knew there had to be something. I just didn't know what it was at the time. And so after some research and talking to peers, people that were running organizations, you know, I came to find out about CEO peer groups and, you know, quickly joined one, you know, with much anticipation for what it could bring to me. Although, frankly, I still wasn't sure, you know, what benefit and value I was going to get out of it. I just knew that it was a way to attempt to bring in a set of experiences and knowledges that I personally didn't possess. And frankly, I wasn't sure how much of my management team, executive team, really, you know, had experience outside the firm, because many of them had been at that point quite long tenured employees of Delphi / Hughes Aircraft Company, which was the, you know, previous firm that ran that organization before Delphi took over.
Right. So really, so your team had probably a very good, solid technical background, right?
Yeah, but you know, I was probably, you know, kind of I'm thinking out loud now, but one of the newer members to the organization, and I had been there 4 years when I was promoted to be general manager and president of the division, and you know, so you could see clearly that we needed to do things differently. And not only did I, as the leader of the organization, need to fill the gaps in my knowledge and experience through some other type of an event like a CEO peer group meeting, but also the team's shared experience needed to be more well-rounded. And so I was able to join a group with, you know, other top executives, many of them business owners, many of them similar-sized firms to what my business was. At that time, my business was right around $50 million in revenue. And so, you know, getting into – and a number of them were manufacturers too, although not all. And it was a – quickly became a source for me of, you know, new friendships, first of all, but maybe more importantly from a business perspective, a group of advisors for me to be able to bounce ideas off of and, frankly – learn from their shared experience as we had conversations around the table, you know, the if you will, the round table at times.
You know, I think I read a book somewhere that talked about those kinds of things.
and that's what amazed me, Doug, because, you know, I felt tremendous commitment to the process because of the value that it delivered to me, and the way it, I think it helped me was a big part of how we transformed that business into a growing, profitable, cash flow positive business that, you know, saw new markets and new products. And there was a lot of good that happened in the time that I was at Delphi. And frankly, I'm not ashamed to say a lot of it came through the exposure I had to these outside executives who were my advisors. But I was, I felt compelled to try to articulate that to people. And as I began my own business here with Renaissance, I was looking for a research, you know, a book, something that I could help to explain to people who hadn't experienced a CEO peer group, an executive forum, what it was about. And I was shocked, candidly, to realize that for as long as CEO peer groups and forums have been around, that no one had been able to clearly put together in a single book kind of the power behind why these groups are so widespread. And so then I saw that, Doug, frankly, as an opportunity for me to let my voice be heard in the marketplace beyond the people that I could individually meet with and talk to or speak to publicly on the, you know, in the events that I speak publicly for. The book, you know, is a way to reach people that, frankly, I've never met before and may in point never meet. Because the book is for sale on Amazon, and it's, you know, kind of sold around the world right now.
You know, you hit a point that that I also experienced. I mean, 15 years ago, when I first got involved in facilitating Renaissance Executive Forum peer groups, I decided I needed some more information on it, even though I had belonged to a group myself. But I went out and, you know, with the idea that I'm going to buy every book there is. I'm a great reader and feel much more comfortable when I'm well read on a subject. And so I went out looking for books on peer groups, forums, advisory boards, mostly to find that there was nothing there. I finally ended up buying books on boards of directors, most of which were simply regurgitations of meeting procedures with very little help on really how a group should work. So, you know, you hit it right on the head. You absolutely filled a need with the Critical Mass book that was, you know, a hole out there in the marketplace. So
you're
ahead.
But you're absolutely right, Doug, because like you, I do like to read as well, and I used to travel a lot when I was the general manager and president with Delphi, and so I'd always, you know, have at least one book on the trip, depending on the length of the trip, so that, you know, keep me occupied on the plane versus watching the movies. But the quantity of information that's been developed around boards of directors is huge. I too have an extensive library of books on the boards of directors. There's even books on advisory groups, whether they be customer councils or or advisory groups for CEOs. But on the true peer experience of CEOs and business owners and top executives for the kind of thing that Renaissance Executive Forums does, and the 40,000 CEOs and business owners around the world who attend these monthly peer group meetings, there was no one book that attempted to explain this phenomena, which I think Critical Mass does very well. Being humble, it does very well because it's written, frankly, from the perspective of a member, a multi-year member, and a facilitator who, you know, kind of sees both – two different lenses how you see the forum meetings, and the number of people that have read it who have commented back to me, and the stuff that's been written on Amazon as reviews, I think really speaks to the fact that the book covers the subject matter quite well.
It does, and besides covering it, Rick, frankly, I have to tell you that being a little lazy sometimes, the way the book was laid out and the way you sort of outlined it and mixed in some very interesting case studies made it, frankly, a very easy read. No disrespect for what it says, but I didn't have to struggle to figure out what the point was. So, you know, tell us a little bit about what the 10 powers are that you talked about there.
Okay, and I'll just, if I can just, I will after I comment on what you just said.
Sure.
That's exactly the way I wrote it. When I talked about buying books, you know, I'd buy many books at the airport, you know, and I'd kind of judge them on how long was my flight, you know, was a, you know, how many hours did I have to read the book. And I intentionally wrote this book to kind of be a one-trip book for people that fly, that you could grab this book and, you know, executives and business owners are so busy, but many of them are lifelong learners who join our groups, right, Doug? They're voracious readers. They constantly are looking for new ideas and a fresh perspective. And so I wanted to write this book because and make it easy and accessible to people, because I read a statistic that 65% of all books purchased in the United States are never read. And I said to myself, I've got to fight that trend. You know, I have to make the book friendly for people to read it and not intimidating and the information easy. And the second point is, this is all about the members of CEO peer groups. And so to include, I made a decision early on to include a case study that supports each of the powers. And I had a number of, as you do as well, you have many more than I do, given your length in the industry and as a member predating that. But, you know, there are countless examples that are moving examples in many cases of how the power, you know, is manifest inside the members. And so to include the personal piece of it, of the members, was really something that resonated with me, that I wanted to do to help people connect with the power on a personal level. So there are 10 powers, but, you know, when we talk about it, Doug, and when I give the presentations on the book and talk to audiences about it, I really group the 10 powers in three basic categories. If you want to look at the beginning, I call them the foundational powers. You know, they're powers like safe haven, solid reasoning, real feedback, guidance, and insurance. And in the book, I talk about, well, what's it mean to have a safe haven, a place where a CEO or business owner can go and talk about issues that in many cases she or he can't speak with anybody else? Because as you know, Doug, many members of CEO peer groups are business owners of family-owned businesses. And their executive team and their board, if they have one, are many times members of the family. And all too often, the CEO needs to talk candidly about members of the family without damaging Thanksgiving turkey day, you know, or leaving a lasting impression. Like, what do I do about my brother who's no longer the, you know, the right person to be the VP of sales? You know, I've got to do something with him, but I know that, you know, mom and dad aren't going to be happy if I don't handle it correctly. So where do you go to have that type of non-judgmental, candid conversation or solid reasoning and real feedback? Because, you know, many of our top executives come to realize that while they think they have a great relationship, and they probably do with their employees, at the end of the day, they're still their employees. And they have to be careful about asking for real feedback, because many times, even the people that you think are giving you the most candid feedback, the last filter in their brain before they answer a question or give advice is, how does this affect me? Because, you know, I don't want this person to get mad at me with this feedback, because, frankly, I like my job potentially, and, you know, I don't want to get fired for telling them something that I'm thinking. You've seen that, I'm sure, and we've heard that in our forum meetings. And then there's guidance and insurance. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and, you know, and in today's let me just add, Rick, that in today's marketplace, I think this issue is even more important than it's ever been before. I find that the most common question I get asked, or that gets asked in a forum meeting by CEOs, is how much do I share with my staff? You know, there's that dilemma of, I don't want to keep them in the dark. I want to let them know what's going on. And then there's the other side of the coin, which says, but I don't want to frighten them so much that they're out looking for another job and leaving me here holding the bag. And that's where, as you mentioned, that's where the forum, the peer group, really comes in. It gives you that safe haven, as you call it.
And you're absolutely true. As you were talking, I was thinking about a couple specific instances that you and I have had in our forums here in Orange County, California, where that very topic came up. Hey, we had a strong last year, and I need to explain to the people what I'm seeing about this year, but I don't want them to be, you know, so worried. Not that they should be worried, but you know, that the uncertainty, right? That's more of what our business owners are seeing in this day and age. It's not necessarily bad news, just the uncertainty of what's going on in the economy that they have to kind of see through to be able to plan a successful future for their business and for their employees. The next level, and there are three of the 10 powers that I group in this one, I call transformational. You know, Doug, and I've experienced both as a member and as a facilitator, that what I term one of the powers, motivation, which also can be thought of as accountability, is really a big reason why members stay for years in CEO peer groups, because they know it gives them a level of professional peer-based accountability that they can't find anywhere else in the marketplace. That being a member of a CEO peer group helps them be the best leader and business owner that they know they can be, because it adds an element of accountability that they can't get inside their business, because they're the boss. You know, many times people let them off the hook for their incomplete tasks because, well, you're the boss, you're the business owner. But in a peer group where they're all peers, when you say you're going to do something by a certain date, the team wants to know, did you do it? And if you didn't, they don't necessarily sugarcoat it. You know, going back to the other power, which is real feedback, they kind of tell you if you fell short of being the best leader that you can be. And I think you would agree, Doug, right, that this is a long-lasting power of a CEO peer group, is this accountability, or what I call motivation, in the, you know, powers of peer groups.
Well, you know, and I think the fact that really speaks to that, Rick, that you mentioned, is that I would say in the last 15 years, more than half, I've never done the statistic, but well, more than half of the CEOs who've participated in those groups that we facilitated here in Orange County stayed for over 7 years, many of them for over 10 years in the groups. Now, why do you stay in a group that long? I mean, you stay in it. Well, one is, Rick mentioned, because of friendships. I mean, you do create strong bonds after you've shared a lot of information. But the other is, there is no place else to go to get that kind of accountability. And we all know, especially at the upper level, how much we need it. So, yeah, your point's right on target, Rick. Absolutely. The real life situations out there back it up 100%.
The other two that I put in this, along with motivation, and we're kind of talking about the second grouping of the powers of peer groups, which are transformational, are magnification and illumination. And they're a little bit different, and I've experienced them both as a member and a facilitator, in that magnification is when a group of, you know, 10 or 11 other peer CEOs or business owners are working on maybe a problem for you, and they ask a series of questions or bring their experience in, that it causes the member who brought the issue to the table to see it deeper, in more detail, to a different level than they've been able to get to with themselves or with their management team. That's a part of what I saw when I was at Delphi and I joined a CEO peer group, is that group of business owners and CEOs could ask me questions and cause me to think at a level that, even though we had a high-performing team at Delphi, and I really respected the executives that I had on my executive team, they were able to give me nuggets of information from the CEO peer group that I could take back and allow us to magnify the problem to a level that we weren't able to get to as a management team. And also, it's illumination. You know, sometimes, you know, Doug, and I've experienced this, when we're talking to a new candidate member about joining a peer group of people from different industries, many times they ask the question, well, what could I possibly learn from people who don't have, you know, my industry expertise? Thinking, you know, trade associations, and those are important and they should be members of those. But many times it's the person who has maybe the least amount of pre-framed knowledge of your industry that asks the most illuminating questions that may seem naive at times, but causes people to take a step back for a second and say, wow, you know, I didn't think of it that way. Your question caused me to think in a different direction. And I know you and I have talked many times that this happens to our members inside the roundtable when we're leading them in a structured questioning to understand. Many times the members' roundtable issue transforms during that segment of the roundtable because the line of questioning the people ask them actually cause us to see the, and cause the member to see the issue in a slightly different context than what they originally thought it was. And you've experienced that in the forums, right, Doug?
Well, you know, so many times, and you're right there, so many times the problem that's stated isn't the problem. It's a symptom of the problem. And by asking more penetrating, deeper questions, trying to understand what the issue really is, what usually happens is the problem gets redefined. And, you know, the old saying is that a problem well stated is a problem that's at least half solved. And that's really what we're talking about here. And the other thing, I mean, have you ever heard the saying, well, my business is unique, how could anybody else understand it? I think we hear it from every single person we talk to begin with. And the first thing they experience in their first forum meeting is, yeah, my business is unique, but you know what? My problems are very similar to everybody else's problems. So I think you're right on track there, Rick.
And then to wrap it up, the last two of the 10 powers are grouped in what I think of as exponential. I mean, are really kind of top order, if you will, powers of the group. They're all equally important, but these for the members can really be life-changing. One of them is molecular, and by what I mean by that is surveys have been done that suggest that the businesses whose CEOs and business owners are parts of these peer groups, and there are 40,000 people like this around the world that are documented, that are in professionally managed and facilitated peer groups, that their business tends to perform at a higher level than their peer industry partners who do not belong to CEO peer groups. And what I think happens is, first of all, the member that joins, as we talked about, is, you know, lifelong learner, high achiever, successful business, looking to take their business to the next level, and then being surrounded by those type of people on a monthly basis actually helps to reinforce that quality within those leaders, and they themselves somewhat change. I think of the story that's in the book of George and Irene, and George had been a multi-year member, and once a year, Renaissance Executive Forums takes the business leaders off-site for a kind of two-day annual planning session, which I know you've done for years, Doug. And in one of these sessions, the discussion was work-life balance, and that was very powerful. And unfortunately, several years later, George passed away. And when the facilitator for Renaissance Executive Forums attended the funeral for George, Irene got up to speak to eulogize George at the wake, and she talked obviously about a variety of things. But one of them was thanking our peer facilitator from that area of the U.S. For giving her and George more time together over the past few years by virtue of that offsite that he had led, where they worked on work-life balance. She and George took longer weekends, more vacations, brought their son Gary into the business more and let him make more decisions so that they could have more free time. And so when you think that idea was taken to heart by a member and they were able to get something in the quality of life that unfortunately, you know, George still passed away, but it's to think that this organization can have that kind of impact on a member is truly life-changing, and that's why I call it molecular. The final point is explosive. Members can bring ideas here that they don't have to worry about what the group forms an opinion of them based on the idea. I mean, as you said, lifelong friendships develop out of this because they really are exposing themselves to a level that is difficult to do, especially in corporate world or in a formal business where you have a board of directors. I know from running the growing to $70 million business that there were many ideas that I much would rather bring to the CEO peer group and bounce off of them than take them to my boss or take them to my board of directors or bring them to my executives without having it filtered first. And in many times it allowed me to come back with a sense that, yeah, I was onto something, even though I couldn't fully flesh it out in my mind, the idea that I had an opportunity to bring it to a group of seasoned advisors, no holds barred, bounce these ideas off the walls, and then bring them back to my organization somewhat vetted, was really powerful, allowing me to see the kind of growth inside the business that we were able to achieve. And I'm not a unique example. I mean, there are countless examples of members of CEO peer groups who've had the same kind of results.
Well, thanks, Rick. I mean, that in no way sums up the book. Let me just state that right up front, because I've read the book and I've referred to the book more times than I'd like to admit. But this is a easy read, but there is a lot of material there, and there is material that I think is well worth putting on your shelf as a reference book too. So I appreciate you struggling to give us a quick synopsis of something that deserves more than the 10 minutes or so that we've really given it. So thanks a lot for that. You know, you did touch on one thing I want to ask you about a little bit more, and you talked about who belongs to these groups. So, you know, who belongs to these groups? What motivates people to join? What are the common characteristics of people who benefit from CEO peer groups?
That's a great question. And people like Roger Staubach, when he left the Dallas Cowboys after a very successful football career, started his own business, has been a long-term member of a CEO peer group. The gentleman that runs Motorola or Mattel or Intuit, I mean, it crosses all technology, ages. There are, you know, diversity is, as you and I know, when we build our forums in Orange County, it's really a strength of a peer group is to have a diversity of on all the different dynamics that you can have, business, education, time inside the company. But they all share some common characteristics, which we kind of started to talk about. You know, they're lifelong learners. They are service first. They have a service first mentality. You know, they understand it is best to give than to receive. And my experience in a CEO peer group is those members who tend to get the most invested in helping other members in the round table and listening to their member presentations tend to get that kind of energy back from the members because it's reciprocal. They also have the ability to stay in the moment. You know, everyone to a person, when we talk to them, Doug, about spending a half day with us in our peer group, which is a lot better than spending a day, but still a half day is a big chunk of time. They all think how busy they're going to be. But once they get there, they see how fast the time goes, because they're so engaged. And a good member is able to stay in the moment and be present at the meeting. They're open-minded. I mean, they don't judge other members based on background or education or diversity. They embrace that, and they're open to new ideas. And they recognize that they personally do not have all the answers, or more importantly, that their firm doesn't have all the answers, and that there's constant changes in the marketplace, and they need to be out there sensing what those changes are from a variety of different sources. We like them to be good communicators, but in our world, a good communicator is able to have a dialogue, which means they're a good listener, as well as able to articulate their thinking and their points well. And finally, they're successful. You know, I talked earlier about how explosive being a member of a CEO peer group can be for a member, because many times they already have a well-run business, but they want to get it to the next level. And so, you know, they have that ability to take a successful business and reinvent it and make it even more successful. So those are, in my experience, kind of the key characteristics of members of CEO peer groups.
And how is this economy, you know, the current market environment that we're in right now, impacting the groups, Rick? You know, we talk about people being successful. I mean, I'm not running into a lot of people every day that are, you know, running around carrying a big sign saying I'm successful. So, but, you know, share with us the sort of attitude rather than the bottom line number.
Yeah. Many of our members and the people that we talk to, candidate members who are considering joining one of our CEO peer groups, have a successful business. Now, it may be challenged this year like it hasn't been challenged in recent memory, or maybe for some of them, for in their entire business career, because we are seeing some levels of uncertainty in this economy like we've not seen for decades. But it causes business leaders to realize that success isn't a given, and that you have to continue to reinvent your business and work on your clients and your relationships. And I think, Doug, from our experience of working together here in the recent past, is that we've seen people being open to the idea of the value of getting even more feedback and information, because as lifelong learners, they recognize that the success of their business starts with them. And the better they can be as a leader, the better their business chances are of not just surviving this economic time, but possibly thriving in it. Because a part of what's going to be a challenge for many businesses as this economy begins to stabilize and then improve, which it will, it always does, it will again this time. Some are starting to suggest that we may be seeing stabilization in the economy. Don't know yet. That's best looked, you know, kind of in hindsight. But
right.
There will be demands on business for growth that they need to be ready for. So, you know, part of what I know we're doing inside of our forum meetings is not just focusing people on the challenges of today, but what are the opportunities of tomorrow? Because you never know when tomorrow is going to be here, and you want to be ready for it, because it could come sooner than some of the common thinking has been. Because, you know, part of what we're going to do on one of our radio shows later this month is talk to some business owners about Q1. Has it been what you had expected it to be? And having, you know, talked to those business owners as they're preparing for this show, I can tell you that while it's not as great as it could be, it also hasn't been as bad as they feared it might be based on where we were mentally in December, kind of the December-January timeframe. So I'm very interested in to see how our business owners are dealing with the challenges that they're confronted in this very uncertain economic time.
And you know, Rick, one of the common things that I know you and I have shared with many of the executives that we work with is sort of the statement in these times that if you've been doing anything the same way for a long period of time, the odds are it no longer is as effective as it was. Sort of recognizing that we're in changing times. The economy is different. Financing is different. Customers, clients have a different attitude. Marketing and advertising to get to them is different. So everybody across all industries is really struggling to find new ways of doing things to retain the growth in their business. So tell us, you know, share with the listeners here some of the things that we're doing and really that were your idea about the different levels of forums that we've created here in Orange County.
We recognized, you know, early on when you and I started talking to each other and you were mentoring me and having been the first franchisee business owner for Renaissance, you know, and developing this business model with them, I really have learned a lot from our relationship and excited about this working together with you to build these forums. But we recognized that 80% of the business issues that a top executive faces are common, with a caveat. And that caveat is if they're around the table with other similarly sized businesses. Because if they are, the issues and the resources they have at their disposal to attack those problems or opportunities are somewhat common. You know, if you put a person in there who has a $10 million company sitting next to a person with a $100 billion company, the resources they have and the way that they solve a problem are different. And many times the problems are different because of the magnitude and the complexity or whatever it might be. So by structuring our groups the way we've structured them, I really think we deliver a high value. I know we deliver a high value to our members because they're sitting around a table with quote-unquote true peers. Either they're in the incubator group, which means they're pre-revenue and they're starting their business and they're dealing with all the issues that come with that, or they're successfully launched their business and they're driving revenue, but it's kind of not to the $2 million mark, and so we put them in our entrepreneurial group where they're with those kind of people at that stage in their business evolution. Or they graduate to the next level, which is the $2 to $20 million group, or the $20 to $100 million group, which we call small and medium-sized business one and two. The issues and the opportunities and the complexities are very common, similar there. And then we also have the group for $100 million businesses or larger, which you know you and I call the enterprise group, where we find that those executives every bit as much need to be and want to be around peers and really value the fact that we're able to put together a forum of true peers who are running, you know, organizations of significance here in Orange County. And then finally, we offer the key executive group, which is really designed to help the next in line, the second in command, the key executives, that the key employees that are helping guide the company to get more exposure in business beyond the company that they work for, because is the case many times. They've been there for quite some time, and maybe you know they need some outside vetting, and that's what we bring by this key executive group. So I'm really excited that in a half day we deliver a lot of value inside those forum meetings, because we're tight around the business models and the revenue size that our businesses possess when they're in that group. But then again, once a year, we bring them all together for our all-member meeting, and that's a great opportunity, you know, for them to meet firms up and down the revenue scale, and, you know, some mentoring and coaching then develops, you know, intra-forum, which is pretty exciting as well.
You know, you kind of remind me of a situation that came up a few years back where we had a forum that was companies basically in the $20 million a year grouping. And I called on a business owner only to discover that he was the head of the North American operations of an international company with just gigantic sales numbers. But as I got to understand what his business was and began to explain that we at that time did not have a group for him. Today we could accommodate him, but then we couldn't. He's told me, he said, no, I want to be in your other group. He said, I've been with this company since I graduated from college, and I've had postings all over the world, and I've never understood what entrepreneurs do. I want to talk to people who own their own businesses. I've only been in a corporate structure. So it was kind of a weird switch. So he actually was a good member for about a year, during which time he got quite a bit out of it in terms of understanding better the entrepreneurial mind, the sort of start your own business kind of attitude. But it was difficult for the rest of the group to get much from him, because when we brought up an issue, his response was, well, I have a department that takes care of that. And of course, the rest of us are taking care of it ourselves. And it didn't translate well. And so it was the one time we made an exception, and we really learned from that and found that the key to a good operating forum is people who are in similar size businesses, not the same size, but similar size businesses, that they face the same kinds of issues. So your point's well taken there, Rick. One of the things I don't want to let you get away without talking about is, you know, you not only facilitate and help build our forums here in Orange County, but you belong to a forum yourself. You want to explain that?
I like the forum experience. It's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And we have a franchise owner in the northern part of Los Angeles, Ken Keller, who conducts a series of forum meetings at California State University at Northridge. And he has a group that he asked me if I would be interested in, and I solicited him, and we worked it out. And I'm a fully functioning member of one of his forum groups, and it is so beneficial. We meet once a month for a half day, and it is really great. And they've been, frankly, Doug, very helpful for me. And as we've worked together, you know, I've brought issues of what's it mean to have a partner. I mean, there are topics that I want to talk about with a group of peers, and they treat me as a full on peer, not as a, you know, another Renaissance executive, not another Ken Keller person, but as a member. And I've begun to develop personal relationships with some of the members outside of the forum meetings, which has been very rewarding for my wife and for myself. So it's a renewal for me. And, you know, every time the meeting's over at 12:30, 1 o'clock, when I'm driving back, you know, it's in northern LA, so it's 85 miles from my house to get up there, but it's well worth the drive. I'm always reminded of how powerful these forum meetings are for the members, because you just you get an opportunity to really at one time get around a table with a bunch of people who become invested in you, and they're all invested in our practice, you know, and understanding how we're doing in Orange County and our members, and so it's really quite rewarding.
Great. Rick, before we get sidetracked here, I want to be sure, can you tell the listeners how they go about getting a copy of your book?
Sure. It's very easy. If you go to Amazon.com and type in Richard Franzi, my book, Critical Mass, will come up as a choice, and just $19.95, go ahead and buy it. To find out more about me, to find out more about you, Doug Gefeller, about our business and the book and our blog and the rest of the things that we're doing out there to promote our practice, I have a website too. It's kind of a mouthful, but it's tied to the book, which is www.thepowerofceopeergroups.com. So it's the words, you know, the T-H-E, power, P-O-W-E-R, of ceopeergroups.com. So I would highly recommend it. People listening to this to check us out. There's a link to the coaching perspective and to more information about Doug as well, because there really is a strength in our practice here in Orange County, which I think is a differentiator as well for our members, which is the combination of you and I working together, Doug, you know, because as you were talking earlier about the challenges that our business owners and the uncertainty that they're facing, I'm thinking how valuable they tell me the monthly coaching they're doing with you is for them to bring perspective to their business. And so I think that's a powerful addition to the executive forums practice to have you as a very practiced coach and accomplished coach in that way.
Well, and you know, one of the key things is that when I first started leading forums back in 1993, as I sort of finished up the first year, I was evaluating what the members were getting out of the meetings, and I realized that they all professed to get lots of value out of the meeting, but that my observation was that they were not taking very much action in terms of following up after the meeting on things they had talked about, and that we really needed to tighten up on the accountability factor because, you know, I'm not the sales-oriented person, so, you know, my motto is get a customer and keep them for life so you don't have to do any more selling. and I felt that the only way I'm going to keep clients for life is if they're getting value, if the value is constantly increasing. And so I was concerned about that. And so we started sort of tweaking with the forum process and making the accountability stronger, putting in programs where quarterly we reviewed the results of their business operations with the rest of the forum group, and annually we sort of set personal and business objectives and reviewed how each quarter how we were doing on achieving those. But again, I still didn't feel that was going to cover it all. So about that time in 93, coaching was starting to get talked about, and I was very curious about it, and went back and got trained as a professional coach, as a professional business coach. I went through the CTI School of Training in San Rafael and ultimately was licensed by the International Coach Federation. There are coaching schools all over the world, but all of them have sort of agreed that there is one licensing entity, and that is the International Coach Federation, and it issues licenses of various levels depending on your experience and capabilities. And so I hold a MCC license, a Master Certified Coach license, which is the highest designation you can get with them. But the idea was that I wanted to add coaching to the forum process, where each month after the forum meeting, before the next meeting, I would meet with the members individually and talk to them about what went on in the meeting, what should have gone on, what should go on in the next meeting, and are there other things that we need to talk about as a coach, things that you need to sort of think through in a one-on-one situation before you bring them to the forum group. So that really led me into the world of coaching, and for me really sort of ignited my passion even more so about this business. As much as I love the facilitation of the forums, I find great personal satisfaction, and I find a an ability to deliver tremendous value in the one-on-one coaching. So we provide all of our forum members with coaching as a follow-up. And in addition, in our meetings, we try to share coaching practices and coaching techniques with them so that they leave the meetings adding to their management talents some coaching capability so that when they go back into the workplace as a manager in the management field, as a leader, that they have another way of dealing with today's generation that's not the command control kind of process, but is more of a coaching, an encouraging, a mentoring way of dealing with personnel to get the most out of them. So that's really what we do. And that coaching is done in a number of ways. We do individual one-on-one coaching. And really, in the last couple of years, we've also been doing a lot of group coaching where we coach the CEO and the CEO's direct reports, or we coach a particular management team. Because, you know, we've talked about team building, and team building, I immediately the thought that comes to my mind is, you know, a day at the park doing rope games or some other kind of thing, trust building to build more of a team cohesion, more of a cohesive spirit. And those things are all valid, but really what's needed in team coaching is more accountability, more process work, more communication work, more definition work about the roles of the individuals and the roles that they have on the team also. So it plays well into our key executive groups also, which deal with the next level down from the CEO. But we do spend a lot of time in team coaching, and in many cases what that looks like is a once a month group coaching session with the management team, usually centered around some management topic, whether it be strategic planning or whether it be delegation or some organizational element, and then followed up with one-on-one coaching, usually phone coaching, with the individual team members to sort of solidify and enhance the learning that went on in the group environment, where we can kind of bring it home on a personal level. What does that mean to me? How do I put that into practice, given my particular little idiosyncrasies about how I manage? And we find that kind of combination of group and one-on-one coaching really provides a great, I want to say, cementing or solidifying of learning experiences that you can't get just out of reading the book or going to the seminar kind of situation. So team coaching has really been a big part of what we're doing.
Well, you know, I've observed that in the subsequent forum meetings, you know, as I know you've been out coaching with individual team members and maybe their extended management team. And then when they come back, the way they show up at the next forum meeting, and then the nature of the conversation about maybe a challenge that they're working on. I can think of one specific member, Doug, where, you know, there was a very clear challenge, that an opportunity that he brought to the forum group on two different occasions. And in between that, there was time where you were out working and coaching with him. And I could see the impact of your coaching on that individual, both the way he presented the information and the kind of the way that he kind of coached the group to help him. He's almost, that's kind of going back to the molecular piece in the book. You know, I was seeing some change in him in a positive way based on the fact that you were able to give him more personal time to work on this issue that he obviously was one of the driving forces why he became a member, frankly, as well, because he really wanted to take his business, you know, get the explosive growth capability that he believes his firm had. So, you know, from a somewhat observer's perspective, but yet someone who's also facilitating the meeting, you're bringing a better member back to the meeting, frankly, not better in a way that they're, you know, a better fit, but just a more rounded member ready to really deal with the challenges and opportunities in a way that I don't know that they would get if they weren't taking advantage of your coaching. So it's great for me as your partner to see that kind of value that we deliver to our members. And I'm encouraging all of our members to really take advantage and opportunity to meeting with you, because I think it can be very powerful.
And, you know, it really evolves around changing perspective. I mean, it's not so much about giving answers. It's about developing new perspectives of looking how we look at the problems. And that's really the title of our coaching website is www.thecoachingperspective.com, where we talk about how we coach people and how we coach for looking and developing new perspectives, because obviously we're not qualified to give the answers to your technical problems, but boy, we sure have no doubt about the ability of and the value of getting a different perspective. So let me just say that, you know, what you've been listening to, this radio show is really an extension of what Rick and I do when we're not on the show. I mean, as we've told you, we're business owners just like many of you listening today, and we've been creating and facilitating CEO peer groups for 15 years here in Orange County now under the banner of Renaissance Executive Forums. And you can look at our website there, www.executiveforums.com. And each week, other than this week, let me say this week too, we invite leading business leaders, and I consider Rick a leading business leader. So Rick, thanks for joining us as host and guest both. But we invite them to join us on the air here and discuss what's going on in their business. And much like our executive forums, our goal here is to learn best practices from leaders who are active in the trenches today, facing today's issues and how they're dealing with it. So, again, if you've missed any of our past broadcasts, you can go to www.latalkradio.com/critical, and you can listen or download those broadcasts. And let me just put in a last plug. I'd highly recommend that you go to Amazon.com and look for Rick's book, the Critical Mass, Power of CEO Peer Groups. Rick, what else would you like to add? How about our show for next week?
Well, you know, we have an exciting series of shows, as we've been out talking with people about, you know, now moving into our second month and as we prepare for our third month. I mean, we really have, in addition to powerful business people like you and me and the people that we've had up to this point, we also have some luminaries who are interested in talking to us about, spending time with us on the radio show. Our goal in this show is to have a conversation that benefits our listening audience, and our targeted listening audience are business owners, top executives, and CEOs who are looking to make better, more informed decisions by getting a fresh perspective, new ideas, and just learning from one another. So if anybody's happening to listen to the show and you know of someone who would make an interesting guest, please reach out to us and let us know that. We would be very interested in talking with people, not just in Southern California, but frankly in other parts of the world as well, who have a perspective on business that would help our business leaders here in Southern California and other places make better, more informed decisions. But, you know, like I talked about, we're going to have several business owners talking about Q1 versus their expectations. Because you and I talked, Doug, it's important to keep perspective in your business. And we feel, as business leaders and members of the business community, that if you solely listen to the major news networks, you might feel that the information is only negative. And while that's important for us to have a balance, we also have to understand that the decisions you make as the leader of your business and the top executive are really, at the end of the day, what you're paid to do, the quality of the decisions that you make. So if we can continue to bring perspectives to that that cause you to think and do some more research, then that's our goal. I'm really excited, Doug, as how well received you and I have been as we've gone out and talked to potential future guests about being a part of the radio show. I mean, unilaterally, or whatever the right word is, I mean, unequivocally, people are excited about this new media of internet radio and are anxious and looking forward to participating in a future show. So I just think this thing just continues to get better and better as we continue to learn our craft here. And I'm really glad that you and I are doing this together, Doug, because it adds a richness for our listening audience that our members find when they come to a forum, because you and I are both at every forum, you know, co-facilitating the forums.
Yeah, and really feel free to download these tapes and use them in any way you want. We have no problem with that. Our goal is to enhance your learning and to improve your business decisions, as Rick said, and to create a new perspective on your problems today. So thank you very much. It's been wonderful talking to you. We'll look forward to talking to you next Monday, 4 to 5, latalkradio.com. Thank you.
You're listening to Critical Mass with Rick Franzi and Doug Feller, only on LA Talk Radio.